drivers themselves are more than welcome to come across and drive for the ride-sharing offering, and we're actually finding the majority of our ride-sharing drivers are either current or ex-taxi drivers.
Yes, this week on Download This Show, the local company trying to beat Uber at its own ride-sharing game.
We're not part of the taxi industry at all. We're a software company. We're here to provide new competition, deliver a lot of innovation.
Plus, the plan to stamp out piracy with three strikes has collapsed. And we examine all of the big announcements coming out of this week's World Mobile Congress in Barcelona. This is your guide to the week in technology, the media and culture. My name is Mark Fennell and welcome to Download This Show. And it is a very big welcome to our panellists this week. She is a writer at the technology website CNET. Welcome, Black. Welcome back, Claire Riley.
Thank you.
You could also be Black. Who knows? It's radio. And alongside her, we have Peter Marks. He is a tech developer. He's a tech commentator and an app developer. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mark.
And don't forget, you can tweet along with the show. The hashtag is DownloadThisShow. Some people said we were biased towards Facebook because I didn't mention Twitter last week. So let me just say now, if you feel compelled to tweet, the hashtag is DownloadThisShow. We're very keen to hear from you. But you can also go to Facebook as well and tell us what you want us to cover at any point. Just search for ABCRN, Download This Show. And it was Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. And it's usually the event when most of the non-Apple mobile providers launch a variety of new and exciting technology. And, of course, you've got the big ones. So Samsung announced they're releasing a brand new phone.
Yes, they're releasing two brand new phones. Theirs is always a flashy press conference. Mm. But they're launching the next round of S, the Galaxy S7 and S7 Edge. So the Edge is the kind of smooth, I've heard it described, and I really can't think of any other way to describe it, but as the infinity pool of smartphones. It's got like that curved over glossy edge.
Yeah, so the screen just keeps going and it rolls up. So I describe it as like Flat Earth Society phone.
Yeah.
Because it just stops.
Yeah, I find it really cool, but then also I've got weird, numpty hands, so sometimes it just...
Confirm, she really does have weird, numpty hands.
Apps are supposed to use that edge, though. I mean, there's extra APIs.
Absolutely.
And I don't know how many of them actually do.
I tell you what...
How would you use it, though?
Like, really cool.
How is it useful?
Like, so simple. Okay, so I have an Edge phone at the moment. It's not the latest generation, but there's a ruler on it. I know that's really lame, but I use it all the freaking time. Cool little
updates. Because the screen goes all the way to the edge.
Screen goes all the way to the edge, so you can have it face down and you can get notifications, it can light up your desk based on who's calling. You can just have that side of the screen on so it saves battery, but you can have details about whether scrolling through and stuff.
So in addition to Samsung, a variety of other manufacturers announced things. We had LG, Sony as well. Out of all the different, like, sticking with just the mobile announcements, what stood out to you, Peter, is the most interesting thing to come out so far?
Actually, I thought one of the things about the Samsungs is that this year's models, although they look very much like last year's models, actually
they
the
always
cameras...
Do.
They have a new hat.
The cameras actually have fewer megapixels, which I think is a good thing because
really?
The megapixel war was just nuts. And now I think they've gone from 16 down to 12 this year. So
I can't buy it.
True.
Well, no.
The PTSD I have from the megapixel wars is just really crippling as well.
And you've got, that was a crazy war because the sensor sites were so small that you then get noise because there's not enough light in them. And of course, Sony's phones, and Sony, of course, makes the sensors which are used in all of the Apple phones, they've got some new technology around, I think it's predicting the motion of things that you're taking pictures of to get rid of motion blur. So that might be a good thing.
That's
too.
That's fascinating.
Because the big thing is people need to think about sensors. Megapixels were really easy to quantify, kind of number and label on the quality of your phone, but
it's like the old megahertz race we used to have with PCs. You know, how many megahertz is this CPU? And then it all got blown apart when we had multi-core and then the different amounts of cache, and it became very complicated.
Oh, so what a thrilling time to be alive though, am I right?
Oh, that was nuts.
I think one of the cool things that I saw to come out of it was LG going modular. I mean, it's not a totally modular phone, but their G5 has a little sort of the lower section where your home button is.
So it's a detachable phone that you can
make. Yeah, it slides out and you can take the battery out. Who needs that? And replace it with a kind of a physical camera control. So you can replace it with a sort of a little hi-fi system.
I think there's a real desire for that. I mean, one of the things we have talked about many times on the show is the long rumored Project Ara out of Google, which is this, you know, build your own, the Lego of phone. You want a camera, put a camera. You want a thing that goes slicing
and dicing. You got a door, you got a phone.
Yeah, Exactly. And I think there is still a fascination for that phone that you can customize in that space, because so much of what we've been getting now with phones has been sort of gearing you towards this one sort of sleek, beautiful object.
But if you want that, you're going to have connectors.
Yes.
And connectors are the thing that break down. If you look at what happens to, you know, why is my printer not printing? It most likely is the cable.
Exactly.
The cable's got a connector. And then, of course, people want waterproof phones and dustproof phones, and all of those things really fight against having things with slots. And
but Peter, I want everything now, said every consumer ever. Now, of course, the number one, it's rare that there is an image that emerges out of Mobile World Congress that actually gets people talking, but there was one image that was very widely shared, and it was a picture of Zuckerberg, Mark Zuckerberg. He also answers to Overlord Zuckerberg, I'm told, touring what appears to be an army of people wearing virtual reality headsets in something that is deeply reminiscent of what I imagine goes on in George Orwell's nightmares.
It reminded me of the 1984
yes,
ad from Apple.
Exactly.
You know, he was stomping up and down.
What was the Facebook announcement to emerge out of Mobile World Congress?
It's all about social, Mark, you know.
No.
Social's the next generation.
Did you just swallow a brochure or something?
Yeah, I did. It was a terrifying photo. Okay, so Samsung put Gear VR headsets, those virtual reality headsets, on every seat, and everyone was supposed to watch part of the show in VR, but Facebook was there because they bought out Oculus.
Because Facebook is everywhere.
Because Facebook's here right now. Hi, Facebook. They bought out Oculus, which is the big name in virtual reality, in 2014, I think. And so that was obviously a $2 billion investment, so they're wanting a bit of return on that green. Mm. And so they're talking about how they're going to make VR video and embed it in the social platform that is Facebook. So you think about Facebook as the way to share your everyday experiences through describing the coffee that you had. Well, now you're going to be able to share those experiences, the idea being that you shoot your everyday life and then people can watch your life in VR.
Well, I've got to say the most interesting thing that's emerged out of social, like for me as a punter in the last year, was 360 videos on Facebook. Mm. And I really think, like if you haven't tried it yet, pop it into the search engine and have a look at it. It's basically if you've got a mobile phone, they've filmed something in 360, you move your mobile phone around, the gyro moves it around. And I've been describing it to people, it's a gateway drug for virtual reality. Mm. You've tried that a couple of times, the prospect of buying a $99 Oculus headset or even, you know, the PlayStation VR when it comes out isn't going to seem like that bridge too far anymore, because I think 360 video opens the door.
And I think with this new Samsung device, which was it looks like a tennis ball or something with a fisheye lens on each side, presumably it'll be much cheaper than the old way of shooting these videos, which was to have a rack of 360 GoPros around, which is quite an expensive thing. So this thing will shoot the whole scene in one go and apparently stitches the two cameras together in software reasonably well.
Yep.
And Facebook also announced, of course YouTube supports these videos as well, Facebook announced some sort of efficient streaming mechanism. So say you've got a birthday party or something, someone can't be there, you put the camera up in the middle of the room and film the whole room. People watching it with their headset on only get the video streamed to them in the direction they are looking. So it's much more efficient than sending the whole 360 stream towards
you. And that ties in with something else that we saw out of MWC this year, which is eyeball detection. Oh gosh, we're all going to die. But it can detect where you're glancing in a headset, so you can get an image. There's a game they showed, Whack-a-Mole. So you could just press something on the side and whack based on where you were looking. So suddenly, when you're starting to detect where someone's looking, they talked about really quality resolution at the part of the image that you're focusing on, and then you don't have to worry about the rest.
I mean, and in fairness, like eyeball recognition, it's not new. Like DSLR cameras have been providing rudimentary version of that for years to let you focus on where you're looking through the viewfinder. But in that context, it actually can help you target sort of information and stream only what you need rather than what you don't. And I will say that of all the different things I've seen VR work best for, live music. So I believe the Sydney Opera House, who actually I think I was bagging last week on the show, they have done amazing work with capturing live music and VR, and there are all these potential and 360 videos. Mm. So there's all this potential there. Download This Show is what you are listening to. It is your guide to the week in technology, the media and culture. Our panel this week is Peter Marks. He is an app developer and a technology commentator who you can hear on Breakfast with Fran Kelly here on RN. And alongside him, we have Claire Riley, who is a writer at the technology website CNET. Mark Fennell is my name, and it was a tough week for Uber. Not only are they appearing in Senate talking about how much tax they may or may not be paying to the Australian government, but they also got a brand new competitor in the ride-sharing market from a local startup called GoCatch. Now, some people might know GoCatch as something that was traditionally a taxi app, but now the company is stepping into ride-sharing. I spoke to the co-founder and CEO, Nen Moorfield, earlier.
So GoCatch is a service that connects you with a driver that's driving their own personal vehicle. It's priced up to 30% less than a taxi, and we have really great quality vehicles and drivers that go through a pretty thorough vetting process. So it's an alternative to a taxi that's cheaper and often a much better quality vehicle and driver.
But that's not necessarily how GoCatch started. So GoCatch originally was an app that you would use to actually get in contact with a taxi. It was a booking app for taxis, and it even sort of looked very much like a taxi app. It was yellow and all those sorts of things. But there's been a very concerted change in your company over the last year or so to shift away from that and step into what is traditionally the area of Uber. Tell me about the decision at the beginning to make that shift away from taxis and into something that's a little bit more broad.
Yeah, so we started in 2011, and it was on a model where we connected passengers directly to taxi drivers, as you've mentioned, and that was kind of irrespective of the network that the driver belonged to. So we were bypassing the traditional taxi networks, and we built up a great technology platform that had all the integrated payments and all of the mapping technology to connect you. And as ride-sharing evolved as a new business model globally, we could see that that was something that was going to get a lot of traction in Australia. There's a lot of pent-up demand for an alternative to taxis that's cheaper and better quality. But the real catalyst here was the change in regulations. The New South Wales and ACT governments legalised ride-sharing late last year, and that really accelerated our plans to add in a ride-sharing option into the app. We'd see it as very complementary, so you can still book a taxi through GoCatch. But for users in Sydney, they'll now see this GoCar option, which just gives them more choice. They can choose to book a traditional taxi and pay off the meter, or they've got that ride-sharing option in there as well now.
So you kind of let Uber do the governmental fight, and then you swoop in at the end of it.
Yeah, you could argue they've done a lot of the hard work. I mean, they've got the funding to engage expensive legal teams and pay large fines. So we weren't in a position to have that kind of running battle with the government. But definitely, it's great that the government's changed regulations to allow for greater competition, because the regulations were a big barrier to entry for a new competitor like us.
So here's the free kick. What do you do that's different or better to what Uber offer currently?
Well, the key one is that we don't have surge pricing. And we know that surge pricing is something that everyone really dislikes. Uber argues that it's around matching supply and demand. We don't believe that stands up under closer analysis. I mean, what we hear from a lot of drivers is that passengers actually stop using the app when surge pricing applies, and the whole system freezes up and no one gets a car and drivers don't get any jobs. So what we're putting in place is a very predictable set peak and off-peak structure. So you always know in advance when you're going to be paying peak rates, and that gives drivers certainty as well around knowing that they're going to earn a higher rate during those times when they're on the road. So we think it's going to be a much better solution for passengers and drivers.
I just want to step back and talk about the cosmetic change in GoCatch, because there was a time when the branding and the imagery of it was very tethered to this look and feel of a taxi service. And then it was a couple of months ago, you sort of did a big redesign. I'm curious with that, is the brand of taxis, in your view, on the nose?
I would say it is. I would say it generally is. That rebranding actually came about from one of the catalysts for it. I was out driving a vehicle myself. We had some promotional vehicles, and I collected one of our passengers that had booked a taxi, and their feedback was, it's like you guys are part of the taxi industry, and that's definitely not what we want. We're not part of the taxi industry at all. We're a software company. We're here to provide new competition, deliver a lot of innovation. So, yeah, that was something where we recognised that branding was too heavily associated with the taxi industry, and actually, we wanted to expand the offering outside of taxis, so it made a lot of sense to rebrand. And, we're really happy with the result. I think now that it's combined with the ride-sharing offering, it's really taken the company into the next stage of growth and product offering as well.
It's interesting though, because the rise and success of GoCatch to date has been built off the back of taxi drivers. If a taxi driver is listening to this right now, what would you say to them, given what you've said before about the industry being on the nose?
Well, we think that, look, one of the reasons the industry is on the nose is because of the lack of focus on customer service. And it's actually been quite difficult for the industry to coordinate itself to, compete on price and enforce standards around service delivery. So a platform like ours actually allows the industry to do that much better. So we have a rating system built into the app. and passengers are empowered to provide feedback on drivers, and we feed that back to the drivers themselves, and that all helps to deliver a better service. But look, the other key thing here is we actually think the ride-sharing launch is going to be really great for our taxi drivers. First off, taxi drivers themselves are more than welcome to come across and drive for the ride-sharing offering, and we're actually finding the majority of our ride-sharing drivers are either current or ex-taxi drivers. A lot of them love the flexible hours that are there. They don't have to pay expensive base fees to lease the vehicle. They're earning money as soon as they hit the ground, whereas in a taxi, they spend the first few hours trying to recover the costs of renting the vehicle. And, you know, we get away from these rigid 12-hour shifts. So that's great for taxi drivers to have more choice about how they go out and earn a living. But also for the drivers that continue to drive taxis, we're very confident that this is going to deliver more work to them. We see a lot of work overflowing from the ride-sharing offering back onto the taxi offering as well, and just attracting more passengers onto our platform. And the great thing is drivers don't need to choose between the two. And so it's not a matter of drivers having to choose us over Uber. It's actually a matter of they now can source work from both. There's some pretty key differences on the driver side. We only charge a 15% commission versus Uber's 20%. Our pricing means that drivers will actually earn 10%, at least 10% more than an Uber job during when Uber's not surge pricing. We pay drivers daily rather than Uber paying them weekly. So, you know, and we're providing an Australian option as well, which drivers are really responding well to. So we think our presence in the market's actually going to be really important for making sure that ride-sharing drivers get a better deal.
And just out of curiosity, do you pay your tax in Australia?
Absolutely. We are big believers in paying our fair share of tax. We'll be paying company tax here, and we comply with the GST regulations. You know, I mean, Uber is taking the ATO to court over the GST rulings. We respect the decision of the umpire, and we'll definitely be abiding by it.
Obviously, Uber dominate this conversation, but if you look around globally, there's Kwaidi in China, there's Grab Taxi in Southeast Asia, I believe India has Ola, and I think you mentioned Lyft, which is the biggest competition in the US. When you look at those other competitors for Uber, what are the lessons that you take away from their strategies as those companies have launched in their markets?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a great question, and it's something that we talk about a lot. I mean, these equivalents that are taking on Uber in their respective markets have demonstrated that there's absolutely room for two participants in the ride-sharing market in each of these countries. And each of them are really strong local competitors. They're locally built and developed companies. So we see in the Australian market, Uber has dominated ride-sharing. There's been no local competitor. We're hitting the ground running. We've got 350,000 passengers already on our platform booking taxis. We're processing about 100,000 taxi bookings a month. So we're able to actually launch into this ride-sharing space and run pretty fast on it. And we're pretty excited about how these equivalents overseas have proven that you can have a very viable, very, very strong local competitor. And we see ourselves taking that role in the market here.
Fast forward for me for a year or maybe, yeah, let's go with a year. What does success look like to you this time next year?
Well, we want to expand this service out nationally. So we would definitely want to have this service expanded outside of Sydney. We'd want to have a very strong presence and a really high density of drivers in the Sydney market. That will just continue to build. We're getting really large numbers of drivers signing up each week. But we absolutely want to bring this to other parts of Australia. We think competition is going to be really important. So that'll be a big focus for us.
One of the interesting issues with ride sharing and all of the different companies have found this is it works quite well in heavily populated areas like cities, but Australia is very big and parts of it are very empty. And how do you roll out to a regional area?
Yeah, look, we're starting to see some, I mean, look, Uber is operating in spots like Geelong and Newcastle and, well, the Gold Coast, you could really argue, is a city, but you know, I think it will be possible to roll the service out in some of the larger regional centres. But you're right, there's going to be parts of Australia that this service won't make it to for quite a while. And, you know, I guess that's the nature of some of these technology platforms. It's a marketplace. You need a high density of passengers and drivers to make the model work. So we can't promise we'll be in every part of Australia, but definitely in all the major capital cities and the major regional centres, I can see this model working well.
All right, Ned Moorfield, thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Thanks, Mark.
Ned Moorfield is the co-founder and CEO of GoCatch. We are back here in the studio with our panelists. Peter Marks is a technology commentator and app developer, and Claire Riley is a technology journalist on the technology website, CNET. All right. You guys have had a look at it. Compare it for me. Uber versus GoCatch, or GoCar, rather, as the new one is called. Which one's better?
Well, look, Uber is obviously a more slick app. Mm-hmm. They're very similar.
Even with the bad redesign they did?
Oh, I kind of like that startup
screen.
You are
wrong.
You know that animated startup screen that goes like this? It's kind of cool.
It's an awful
redesign.
That
was a great visual of you being an animated startup screen.
I would like check out the video podcast for that one.
Both of them, I mean, these guys have just nicked the whole user interface, including the slider thing across the bottom from choosing between a go-car and a taxi and a, what is it, a big taxi or something or other.
Yeah, maxi-taxi.
But when I tried it
There's
out...
no option for horse and cart. No option for horse and cart.
They should have
when
all of those
things. When is somebody going to do that?
I tried it out at my home, which is on the Northern Beaches, and it basically apologised and said, we're sorry, we're getting more drivers every day, but
well, they launched on
no
Monday,
one.
So let's be fair.
And Uber must be nervous because they sent out a press release today promising to bring puppies to anybody that asks. And you know... whenever Uber do that, they send out puppies or ice cream or kittens.
Something's gone wrong in the back boiler room.
Exactly, because I mean, last time they did it, one of their drivers was up for like possibly charges in Victorian court. It's so, like if you actually follow the trend, it's so naked what Uber do when they're getting bad publicity. They do some weird cute stunt.
I think puppies
makes
is
all
just
the
cruel.
News.
Look, the thing for me is we're very keen on the apps here. You're a developer, so you know that whole side of things. For the everyday consumer, do they worry too much about what happens when they slide the bar across and the clunkiness of that? I think Ned, I was speaking to him last week and he was saying, you're looking at sort of 20, 30% cheaper than Uber for off-peak fares and then sort of 10 to 15 for peak fares. They're not charging as much of a commission to drivers, so we may see it cheaper coming through. And also they have a kind of a crew of 35,000 drivers who are with GoCatch as the app provider in traditional taxis nationwide. And they've already said to those people, a lot of ride-sharing drivers are actually taxi drivers in their spare time. So they've got a really strong pull to
draw
from.
But don't you think, I mean, if you get into a taxi today, they often have multiple mobile phones.
I was just
going to
say,
different networks.
How do they have space on their dashboard for yet another mobile phone? Because you get in there now and there's like four of them.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
And they're saying it's going to be cheaper, which means that they're doing it by paying the drivers less. So the driver's sitting there, they've got an Uber device and they've got this other one and who knows what else. Aren't they going to go through them in priority order and say, I'll take the one that's got a ride at the biggest price?
Well, I think we may see the kind of consolidation of the industry and we may not have taxi drivers with 17 different phones in their cars. But I think the ability to actually go through a regular taxi or to go through ride sharing, I mean, certainly amongst my friends, it's much more popular. And these are people that are going, yep, I'll get an Uber home, you know, young women travelling by themselves at night, and it's totally accepted and fine.
It's also that thing of there is a point at which when a noun becomes a verb. It's the Google effect.
That's
and
how I started.
Uber has done that.
I haven't caught a taxi for some time, and I like the way Uber works, or any of them work, with the payment, particularly the non-cash
payment.
The sound
of every
payment.
Taxi driver turning off Radio National. Right?
Well, it's interesting. My wife is currently in Adelaide, and she's been catching cabs, and she said cabs have got better.
Yeah.
So she's getting into cabs and they are asking about what you want on the radio and they are more clean. And so maybe they're modelling the behaviour and they're kind of being put under a bit of pressure.
Download This Show is what you are listening to. It is your guide to the week in technology, the media and culture. My name is Mark Fennell. I am your reasonably competent host, but I am surrounded by people far smarter than me. Claire Riley is a technology writer for the website CNET and Peter Marks is a technology commentator and an actual goddamn app developer. Huge news in piracy, which is the thing I feel like I say every week. The proposed three strikes plan has been struck down.
So I had a wonderful chat to Graham Burke of Village Roadshow, who is just a delight every time I get him on the phone. He's good value.
He's got strong opinions, which is always helpful in our
profession. He's quotable. He's very quotable and it's entertaining. But he basically told us that three strikes, I called him about something totally unrelated.
You just wanted to see if Mad Max Fury Road was going to win the Oscar, basically?
Really? Yeah. And he always just drops something unexpected in our phone conversations. But I said, you know, where are we at with three strikes? I mean, it came in, the government said, let's bring in three strikes, which is a graduated notice scheme, so you get more severe letters in the mail if you've been downloading things you shouldn't be. It's designed to educate consumers about getting legitimate content. So they had to bring it in. They announced that they would do it sort of April last year. September was the date that they had to kind of get it all enacted by. That date came and went, and they were squabbling over costs. So caught up with Graham and he's like, oh, yeah, no, we're not doing that anymore. Essentially...
one-man press release.
Yeah, it's great. Essentially, they did an independent review and they deemed that it was going to be too expensive to send the notices, $16 to $20 a pop, he said. So
I know stamps have gone up, but I thought it was only a dollar.
Australia Post.
The oldest of media is slugging the slightly less old of media.
Gouging.
Yeah. And trying to take down the newest of media.
Yeah, so they decided that it was a very kind of clunky process, which is, strangely enough, something that people were saying to them for a long time once they did their review, saw how much it was going to cost them. And really, if it's the rights holders that are kind of recouping lost revenues, then it's probably them that have to do most of the spending. But they did hint at maybe the opportunity for an automated system to kind of detect piracy.
Whilst Australia Post may be letting the movie studios down, the legal system seems to still provide them with options. They are looking at potentially using legal means to shut down websites that they believe exist purely for the purposes of piracy. The website they started with, though, was unusual. Was it Solar Movies?
Solar. Haven't you heard of that, Mark? I've heard of it. I go there every day.
No one's heard of Solar Movies.
Yeah. Like, oh, we have now.
Yeah. Like there are 1,001 very well-known pirating and streaming sites. Why would they start with such an unknown service as Solar Movie?
It's a slam dunk. You go to that website and there's no kind of, you can use Pirate Bay or a torrent service. You can use a torrent service if you're just sharing a really large file that you've created and you hold the IP on. So people could argue that with a torrent service. This is a site that exists purely for downloading films and for streaming films that are still in the cinema. So it you kind of look at it and it really does satisfy all the parts of the legislation, which is it must be a website based overseas. It must have the primary purpose of facilitating the infringement of copyright. Although things like primary purpose and facilitation are sort of vague terms, those are pretty clear to see with Solar Movie. So it's absolutely strategic. It's not as headline-grabbing as Pirate Bay, but we're definitely going to see Pirate Bay
So they're going to start
soon.
Small and
a lot of the domains are being blocked. I mean, a lot of the Pirate Bays around the world have disappeared. Yeah. So there has been work done to make it a bit more difficult. And, of course, there's a lot of rumours that basically the ISPs are all throttling torrent speeds. They seem to have gone down, I hear.
I've heard. Look at him. Like he's like maybe he's never seen more guilty.
Maybe that's, well, when I want to get my latest Ubuntu ISO binary, I torrent it and it doesn't come down as quickly as it used to.
Yeah, but I think what the rights holders have decided is it's much better to go after the kind of the dealer in the situation, for a want of a better word, by shutting off the website where people will get the content rather than going after the absolute small fry of trying to chase individual pirates who might have pirated one film, having to send them three notices. There's a whole system in place with that.
And there's been all these stories
timelines
of, you know, single mother, no computer skills, getting threatening letters.
I mean, we saw with Dallas Buyers Club that the guys from the actual movie studio said that they wouldn't go after disabled people, they wouldn't go after war veterans. You know, there was a really specific list of people for whom it was bad PR to be chasing.
And even Graham Burke, actually speaking last year, he did say, we won't go after single mothers. I'm like, do you have a long list of people that, like,
you know,
do?
I can tell when I look at an IP address, I'm like, that person's a single mum struggling on Struggle Street.
I love
how the IP.
Dallas Buyers Club was a story of a person who was illegally importing drugs to save people from HIV.
I would sit in the federal court and I was like, does anybody get the irony here?
All right, you can follow on with the conversation on Facebook as well. We'd love to know what you think of the new announcements out of Mobile World Congress. What do you think of GoKart? And of course, I know you have opinions about piracy. Let us know on the Download This Show Facebook page. My name is Mark Fennell. Very big thank you to our panellists this week, Claire Riley from CNET.
Thank you.
Peter Marks from ABC Radio National's Breakfast, and an app developer who may or may not be building something very exciting that the ABC is releasing in a couple of weeks I'm not allowed to tell you about. You can make a noise, Peter. Okay. It's radio.
Thank you, Mark.
And as always, thank you for listening to another episode of Download This Show.